Welcome to this portion of Focal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we have as a returning guest, Dr. Peter Loback. He and I had the privilege to write a big, thick book about the faith of George Washington, which thankfully became a bestseller, George Washington's Sacred Fire. Dr. Loback is the president and founder of Providence Forum, and we're going to talk right now, Dr. Loback, if we could, about historical revisionism, and I want to begin with the example of how the last church of George Washington's life, and there were many churches in his life, but the last church he attended regularly was Christ Church in Alexandria. You and I visited there when we were doing our research on the book, and they recently decided to go ahead and remove a beautiful marble plaque in honor of George Washington, in part because its counterpart, in other words, the counterpart to that marble plaque, is in honor of Robert Edward Lee, another member of that church, as in Robert E. Lee, as in the Civil War general. And so they felt, oh, well, we got to be welcoming at this church. And so that's why they decided to vote to remove the plaques. But I want to talk about that whole issue in general, and let me go ahead and open the floor and let you wax eloquent on this.
Okay, well, there's so many ironies in what just happened there. Now, first of all, the Episcopal Church and the Anglican tradition is one of the branches of the Christian tradition that celebrates the human expression of Christianity and has done so by having various icons and images and plaques and things that celebrate all sorts of people. And they felt that that's consistent with their view of theology. Now, the Puritan tradition might actually be pleased that they took down a plaque with Washington and Lee's name on it, because they said no human names ought to show up in worship places. So, you know, there's this interesting debate. But let's take it out of the Reformation discussion and just put it right into the American context. The first thing that we need to realize is that the two men that they are disgracing by removing the plaque because they say they've been connected with slavery actually are the two men who best represent why slavery was overcome in America in the sense of those who had slaves. Washington in his life went from being an unconcerned slave owner to one who actually wanted to end his slaves and did so through his will. It's amazing. So he's a man to honor. He's the only slave-owning president of America who freed his slaves by his own initiative. The others who had them, it was because the Civil War came along. Secondly, I think it's interesting, is that Robert E. Lee, the great head of the Southern Confederate Army, was also a pro-freedom Southern person. He worked hard to find ways to free slaves. He was part, even before the Civil War ever happened, he and his wife were very active in training slaves in their own homes for education, working hard to get slaves free. When they were freed, we know that Mrs. Lee actually traveled great distances to make sure that their freed slaves were becoming well adjusted in their new circumstances. Cool. Their needs were being addressed. And after the war was over, Lee was actually honored by the Northern leaders because of his tremendous commitment for the reunification of the country and his effort to bring about actually a respect for the African American and now a peaceful resolution between the former fighting Southerners and fighting Northerners, that he was actually a reconciler. So a racial reconciler, a Civil War reconciler, and he's the one that they're complaining about. And I think I actually said this in an article I wrote some months ago. It's tragic that they're attacking Robert Lee, because to Robert E. Lee, black lives mattered. Mm. He went out of his way to protect them and care for them, and now they're disgracing them. To do this indicates absolute capitulation to the demands of a secular left that wants to divide, and overlooking the clear, beautiful history of two Southerners, George Washington and Robert E. Lee, who are absolutely committed to seeing the slave freed and becoming part of the society. They were the leaders and the vanguard of the South moving in the direction. And I would conclude, if the South had followed their examples, there would have been no Civil War. And so isn't it a shame that they're the ones that are being removed from the very church that celebrated George Washington, where he used to worship regularly? It's a tragic thing.
Yeah. So many statues, so little time. So, okay, going back to the specifics, by the way, with Robert E. Lee, there's a fantastic story. I just love this story. And it occurred in another Episcopal church, but in Richmond. And you could tell us this story. But after the war, there was a black man that came to the church and sat or kneeled at the communion table. And you finish the story.
Well, to set it up, it's interesting. The Episcopal Church obviously had maintained the division between how the African Americans and the whites had worshipped. And now the Civil War is over. There's now federal troops that are making sure that these new rules that are in place in the reunited country are going to be enforced. And so there was a desire actually to create, if you will, a confrontation, and they used the church to do it. They brought into the church at a time for the communion service, when the Eucharist is being celebrated, a former slave. They brought him up to the table, and they knew that that would create chaos, and it was a way of kind of sticking something in the eye of the Southern church. And at that moment, rather than letting it be a moment of racial tension or northern dominance of the southern defeated folks, Robert E. Lee willingly went forward and knelt in communion with the former slave, now a freeman, at the Eucharist. And his great line was, "The ground is level at the foot of the cross."
Wow.
And so his very example of participating humbly as a believer at the Lord's table prevented an explosion that was actually precipitated by those who wanted to create a scene, and he brought about the healing of the congregation by his simple act. That's the kind of leader he was. And now, isn't it interesting, a man who actually honored white and black in the Episcopal Church has been removed from the Episcopal Church, saying we're ashamed of him. They should celebrate him. He was a man of great honor, integrity, spiritual wisdom, and a racial reconciler, as well as a warrior reconciler between divided nation parts in recreating the Union. So it's a tragic story on every level.
You know, it's interesting, too, if I could just say this real fast. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but because you and I did that book on George Washington, there was a gentleman that I was able to work with to produce a book about Thomas Jefferson, whose picture of as far as his faith is much more nuanced. He's not, you know, clearly not a lifelong skeptic, as sometimes, you know, he's made out to be. But he's also certainly not a lifelong, you know, evangelical or, you know, by any stretch of any imagination. Anyway, the co-author on that book, Dr. Mark Belisles, lives in Charlottesville, where Thomas Jefferson's home was. And we all know about the terrible incident involving the statue in Charlottesville of Robert E. Lee and the fighting and so forth. That was about 1,300 people on the streets of Charlottesville, August 12, 2017, duking it out. But most of those people were from out of town. So whether they were there from the alt-right, as it's called, or the alt-left, or whatever you want to call them, most of those people were out-of-towners. Meanwhile, Dr. Belisles, a white minister in Charlottesville, co-author of that book with me, coordinated later a prayer meeting and prayer walk with a black minister in town, and they got Harry Jackson and some others to come and speak on December 1st and 2nd. And not only did they have a big prayer meeting and a prayer walk where the black and the white man held hands and walked around the city and prayed for Jesus to heal the city and so forth, they also came up with a strategy for long-term racial reconciliation, using the churches as the main thing, Jesus Christ, to heal Charlottesville. But here's the most important part of the whole thing. More people from Charlottesville attended and participated in the healing for Charlottesville then participated in that terrible event of August 12th that, you know, unfortunately the whole world saw that. So it's almost like God is at work under the radar. We don't all see it. To me, that racial reconciliation through the power of Jesus Christ, which is exemplified in that story you told about Robert E. Lee, that's what we need to get back to in America, not removing more statues, but, putting up other statues, you know, Frederick Douglass, whatever, you know, so we can work towards this reconciliation.
Yeah, wouldn't it be wonderful if where there's a Robert E. Lee statue, we put up a statue of Frederick Douglass or Sojourner Truth or one of the African Americans, because Robert E. Lee would have said, I welcome that person right next to me because that was part of my vision. That's what Christianity would do. But we're living in a day where the very strategy of what we can call the neo-Marxist left, if whatever ideology you want to call it, is to divide and conquer. It's to find the fissures between any groups. You know, it's always class struggle. It's the rich versus the poor, or it's one national entity versus another national entity, or it's one political party versus another political party, or it's one ideology versus another, or it's one race versus another. Divide and conquer. This is the strategy. Christianity, well, we have not been always able to reconcile because we are fallen and sinful people. We remember that the gospel says that God was in Christ reconciling the world unto himself, that we are ministers or agents of reconciliation. And so our goal, wherever the gospel goes, is to bring peace on earth, goodwill toward men. And part of the way that our founders saw that to be developed in the political setting, in the public square, was to give the freedom of conscience, the right for us, each of us, to exercise our religious views differently, and then also to have the freedom of speech, the freedom of press, the right to assemble peaceably, the right to petition our government. All of these things we're saying, there's room for diversity, there's room for difference, because we share an overarching common commitment to the dignity of man and the right for all of us to be protected as individuals. That's actually what happened in the amendments to the Bill of Rights, was to say the African American has full civil liberties just like everybody else. And that means, like Martin Luther King said it so well, that a man would not be judged by the color of his skin, by the content of his character. And what we're finding is that people are trying to forget character and go back to issues of color of the skin. Those that are doing this because of their racial concern, they're turning Martin Luther King's message on its head, and they're tearing his statue down, even though there is his statue standing. They're standing against the very principles that he was committed to. So we need the Christian faith and its values once again to engage these issues, because we are going to seek to stand together to tear down the hostility and put in its place the respect, because we believe that we are made by a common creator, and therefore we all have unalienable rights because we are made in the image of God. That goes into the innermost being of our souls, into our identity as humans. It has nothing to do with the color of our skin or our ethnic origins, even our religious commitments. It has to do with what we believe God has made us, and that's the uniqueness of America, a diverse nation that's united on common transcendent values. So what's at stake here? Tearing down statues is really not the statues. It's the seeking to tear apart people that actually are united in a common culture with transcendent rights that we recognize that we mutually share in.
Okay, we have 30 seconds to wrap up. The Vestry of Christ Church of Alexandria, which has voted to remove those plaques, of Washington and Robert E. Lee, say, well, we want everybody to feel like they're welcome here at the church. You know, not just some, but everybody.
That what they should have done is put a plaque right next to that one and said, Washington and Lee wanted everybody to be welcome here. That's the story of their lives, and that was seen in their actions. So we welcome you just as they would have. That would have been brilliant. Sadly, they didn't do it.
Dr. Peter Lobeck, providenceforum.org. Thanks again for being with us on Vocal Point.